Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW
Collision. Patrick, I was thinking as this show was coming to a close, who are the five biggest names in AEW who appeared on this episode? It wasn't an easy call. And when I say appeared in front of the crowd, you know, MJF, biggest star, appeared on the screen. But I scrolled through and I was like, and you know, it was fun seeing some talent that normally is reserved, say, for Rampage or occasional appearances here and there. It's kind of a collection of the bench players and some of them who are oft underutilized. But I mean, once you get past Darby in terms of people who appeared in front of the crowd, then it's the Acclaimed and FTR. And then is it Starks and Big Bill at that point? And I know Claudio and Yuta ran out at the end, so maybe you include Claudio. But it did strike me as we got to the end, I had to scroll back and go, it just doesn't, it feels like, based on where the wrestlers who were featured stand right now and how they've been portrayed, as B show of a collision as I've seen. Did that aspect of the show strike you?
Yeah, hey, Wade, absolutely. It really did. This was one of the – easy to say it now because it just the show just ended, but this was one of the worst episodes I've seen in a while. And I guess, you know, you put your thumb right on it. I guess that's probably a good way to say it and reason to give. I do have other reasons that I'm sure we'll talk about, but Darby's clearly the one name that you would call out in that list. I would agree. FTR seems to be like the go-to team here for Collision, and I don't even know the last time we really saw them on Wednesday night. And Ricky Starks is, I don't know if you're stretching it yet with him. I think he's certainly elevated himself for the last few months. But beyond that, I've struggled with this. I am soured on the Acclaimed for many reasons. So I personally would not put them in that, but I certainly understand why they would be from a crowd reaction perspective, from a merchandise sales perspective. I get that. But beyond that, it is really stretching it.
And I know Jay White and MJF appeared in fresh promos. And I actually like that. I think AEW should find creative ways. In fact, I thought House of Black were not there until the end. I thought, you know, I thought maybe they filmed them in the luxury suite on another night. And that's why Kevin Kelly said, "Where are they?" And then Tony Schiavone goes, "Well, probably somewhere in the arena." I was like, that was Kelly screwing up. And then when they appeared on the big screen again, I'm like, well, you know, I'm kind of thinking, well, that's pretty efficient. Saves using up dates on wrestlers' contracts or overworking them, travel expenses and all that. And I'm for that level of creativity, but it turned out House of Black were there. So it's kind of a moot point, but I would like to see a presence, more of a presence of the wrestlers who are regarded as top tier. Now that CM Punk is not on Collision, the show's struggling for ratings. It even was with Punk, but it's struggling for an identity. And if you're going to have MJF on the show, I know he's world champ, so he should float between both shows. They've never officially said there's any kind of roster split, and there hasn't been a hard split. And I like that each show has an identity, but it feels out of balance if the identity is going to be we're not going to feature the people who are perceived as more the top stars, Jericho, John Moxley, Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, to name a few from Dynamite. I know last week was an exception. He had a world title match, and that was a nice attempt by putting Kenny on there to give a boost to the ratings, and it was a little embarrassing that it didn't give it more of a boost. A lot of things happened on the show, nothing blockbuster, but that's what stood out to me. It's like, is this a sustainable franchise, so to speak, for AEW, if this is what it's going to be, or is this part of a growing pain where they're like, well, wait, we want to utilize Keith Lee better. We want to utilize Samoa Joe better. We want to utilize Mark Briscoe better and Lance Archer
Vincent
that got added. Yeah, what's
Vincent and Dutch? Yeah,
yeah.
Vincent oh, you know what? Now I am too. That just goes to show how much really been
the righteous.
Pushed here. The righteous, thank you. Yeah,
yes, the righteous. Like, if the goal is we're going to, you know, feature them in this, they're like a lot of the people we saw on this show. If this is the beginning of trying to make them feel like a big deal, okay, then it's a work in progress, and it needs work, and it needs to progress to feel like a major league show. But if they can't achieve that, or it's the wrong choice of people to feature, I think they're in a little bit of trouble with this show. And so, yeah, especially after a disappointing rating last week, they're not going head to head with Crown Jewel today. They didn't, you know, they've taken a beating viewership wise when they go head to head with WWE or NXT. They didn't have to do that tonight because Crown Jewel aired earlier, although it might burn people out a little bit and go, well, I saw my wrestling tonight. Now I'm going to go do something else. Or I saw it this afternoon, so I won't watch tonight. But yeah, it was an interesting show in that respect, because it did feel like Tony didn't want to bring in a lot of the big guns, but maybe it's a sign of what he wants Collision to be. But man, they got some work to do.
Yeah, the logic is sound there, Wade. I agree with what you're saying. I mean, the idea of where this show could be, that makes a lot of sense. But then you get people like the Work Horsemen on the show. You get Dalton Castle and the boys. And it's from a work rate, Kip Sabian, thank you. Even Emi Sakura, who technically is, we're told every time she's on screen that she's phenomenal and has such a track record, and yet she loses every time we see her. So things like that don't really equate to what you're getting at, which, you know, I would hope that would be what we get with Collision down the road. But even to your point about, you know, saving expense with some people coming in, we had Samoa Joe on screen. He didn't do anything in front of the crowd. We had Andrade there for 3 weeks now in a row telling us nothing new about the CJ Perry angle, and we'll have to wait another week for that. So, you know, they're using people in some regard, but the people that we're actually seeing, you know, in the ring is not really, you know, adding up to that logic from what I'm seeing tonight. You know, this is a perfect example of that.
Yeah. It did. You don't want Collision to start to feel like hours 2 and 3 of Rampage followed, and in addition to being a commercial for Dynamite. That said, I will give them a little credit. There was more references to Rampage tonight than we normally get.
Yes.
And I think that's good if they want to rehabilitate Rampage. I posted an article on our website, pwtorch.com, a few days ago, assessing the impact Rampage is, or in Collision has had on Rampage. And it's taken viewers away from Rampage. If I mean, there could be other external factors, but last year for like the 15 weeks that Collision has been on the air, during that period last year versus the 15 weeks before Collision debuted, that time period a year ago, ratings for Rampage were pretty steady. This year, since Collision started, that second 15-week chunk of the last 30 weeks, I hope I'm having this make sense, has dropped, where last year it didn't during the same time period. So, and it's substantial. So Collision has pulled some people away from Friday nights. They're getting their fix on Saturday nights. If Rampage is going to be relevant and have any chance, it's not just loading it up on stars, because you just can't spread your stars that thin. It has to be making it seem relevant by showing some highlights and integrating into Collision and Dynamite things that happen on Rampage. So again, it's not an overnight fix, but it at least keeps it out of this abyss of irrelevance.
Yeah, and I don't think this has really happened too
by the way
much,
which is the opposite of island of relevance, but go ahead.
Exactly. I was just gonna say, I don't think this has happened too much, if I can really speak to it as somebody who follows and covers Rampage each and every week. It could really kind of get in the way to a degree where you want to go from Dynamite to – you have to go from Dynamite to Rampage to Collision back to Dynamite. But because Dynamite's the A show, you have to push what's happening on Rampage first before you can really bolster – you know, really promote what's going to happen on Saturday. And Saturday should be where you're going from Wednesday. So in a way, it's kind of – in a way, it is kind of in a way – to some degree. So I am glad to hear back to your, you know, your initial point about using Rampage highlights on Collision. I mean, that's extremely logical. I think they need to do more of that and just connect these shows one to the next. The one thing that I don't know if we ever see, and I'm sure someone out there can rattle it off the top of their head, but we don't really seem to see Collision highlights or anything of note spoken to about on Dynamite. So that's something that I would like to see. Just kind of make this show live beyond the Saturday night on two hours time slot, which again, I love the idea of a Saturday night wrestling show. So I get hyped up for this show each and every week. I think I've pretty much seen them all at this point live, maybe give or take a few, but it is just a fun idea to sit down on a Saturday night when there's nothing else to do. You're free and you get to watch just 2 hours of good in-ring wrestling. You know you're going to get that, but there are some head-scratching otherwise as far as the storylines or lack of character development that are just, you know, frustrating lately.
I think one of the strengths of this show is that they took things and this sounds like a backhanded compliment, but I don't know how else to say it. Matches and people nobody would care about, and they, or very few would, and they within the show made an effort to get you to care about them. You know, A.R. Fox yes. interrupted the pre-tape or the soundbite interview at the top of the show with Swerve Strickland. Thumbs up that they brought the soundbite promos back. With Jake Roberts on the microphone and Lance Archer building up the Darby match. And then it felt like who's going to win this one? They're giving TV time and mic time to Archer and Jake. And Archer is sort of like Brian Cage. He's the big guy who puts over smaller guys, but he's not going to be a main eventer. And that's sort of been established. But I thought they did a good job kind of creating some doubt. Like, is this going to be not the end of Darby, but like a way to build up an ongoing feud where Archer gets a big win? That crossed my mind. Maybe they're going to go that direction. I think the average viewer thought there were some stakes there. The impromptu trails match was weird, but they set it up at least, and we'll get into that segment, trust me. and then, you know, we had Sabian cut a promo and introduce the Work Horseman in a promo. It didn't just come out, and then, you know, Kevin Kelly or Tony's trying to catch us up on why they're teaming. They actually built up or had them talk about being a team. Kip introduced them. I didn't feel like I was behind on something. And then Briscoe with the mystery partners. And frankly, a nice payoff. I like Dustin and Keith Lee and Briscoe. I think it's an eclectic mix of veterans that are kind of fun to see out there. And it's probably good in the case of Dustin and Keith. They're not working singles matches, although we'll talk about the Joe one coming up in a moment. Willow and Emi Sakura, they could have done, you know, more to build that up. But on commentary, you know, they tried to frame it. And just going back to the beginning, they had the soundbite interviews at the top of the show. So you got to see some of the wrestlers who were going to be in the main event. I know we have an email on LFI and their push, but I would say, and I'm probably leaving a couple things out here and there, but they sprinkled in context and promos and backstory and video to elevate what really looked like a B show tonight. And it pulled me more in. If I'm looking for a bright spot, that is one of them. I mean, they easily could have phoned in and just presented these matches without effort or context. And I think there was effort that resulted in some context.
Yeah, good points. I think the only thing that doesn't fit that mold, which you didn't mention, of course, was the Kingdom squash match against two probably local talent. But yeah, that's the only thing that I can come up with. I think, to your point, weaving something, this can all live within this show. It doesn't necessarily have to go beyond. That's an example of that. But if you're able to book within the show and make things make sense, I'm all for it. So they did do a good job there. I do want to talk to you about this as we go, but the one thing that is striking me that this doesn't work for me is the fact that anyone can just kind of stand up into a mic and challenge someone else for the title or just their shot at the title. And that's a lingering issue that seems to be gaining some legs here.
I agree.
Yeah.
All right. Let's pause. Let's formally introduce ourselves in the show, and then we'll get on to some of these other topics. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Saturday, November 4th, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, back hosting this week after being at the Timberwolves game last week. And, of course, I can't go anywhere like this season and not bring cold germs home with me. So between that and a brief stop at a winding down Halloween party afterwards, I picked something up. I don't know how long it'll last tonight. And how much I'll have to lean on Patrick as the show goes on, because my throat endurance is very, very low the last few days. It starts to hurt when I talk too much or project too much. And I already hosted a podcast earlier covering the Crown Jewel event for WWE. That was a VIP exclusive show. And by the way, thanks to Chris Maitland and Justin McClellan for covering for me last Saturday, hosting this show. And as I was at the Timberwolves game with Kelly Wells from the PWT here at PW Torch. So thanks to them for covering last week's show. So anyway, I'm the editor, publisher, founder of Pro Wrestling Torch Newsletter, the website pwtorch.com, and I host a variety of podcasts, including Table After Crown Jewel with Todd Martin and Rich Fan, and also the Wade Keller Hotlines throughout the week, reviewing start to finish the four major live TV shows on prime time, and also news updates and Ask the Editor formats. Plus, I host The Fix with Todd and Martin, which runs 4 to 5 hours every Thursday. Very in-depth look at the week in wrestling, plus stacked and excellent mailbag discussion with great questions for our VIP members. Everything with Rich and Wade is another VIP signature show. Go VIP to hear all of them and to hear the free shows, ad-free and plug-free also. PWTorch.com/goVIP to become a VIP member. That also unlocks 35 years of archives of podcasts, retro radio shows, hundreds of them from the 90s, including ones I hosted at KFAN Radio. It's fascinating to look back at some of my earlier broadcasting on radio pre-podcast, before podcast was a thing, and our early podcasts now dating back 20 years, plus our newsletter back issues, my contemporaneous coverage of Pro Wrestling's biggest stories from the late 80s through today. Yes, I've been doing this a long time and seen a lot and covered a lot, and Dustin Rhodes has been around for almost all of it. I was just thinking about that when he came out. I was like, man, I remember that WCW house show in like 92, and it was at the Roy Wilkins Auditorium, and was he against Lex Luger? I can't remember who he faced, but I was like, yeah, just young Dustin, and then here we are, and he's still going and still looks almost the same, which is kind of crazy. Anyway, the other voice you hear on the show is Patrick Moynihan. He covers Rampage every Friday night at pwtorch.com. He is also part of an excellent PW Torch Daily Cast, a podcast unlike any others. I just spoke about our library of back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter. You want to, Alex, utilize that library for your podcast. Tell people, Patrick, welcome, and tell people about what you do every week on the on your daily cast.
Thanks so much, Wade. Great to be here. And yes, we certainly do. Like you mentioned, we host the 90s Pastcast. It drops pretty consistently every Friday on that feed. I co-host with Alex McDonald. We take a weekly look back 30 years ago in pro wrestling. As you mentioned, Wade, we used the PW Torch issues as our guide. So we go through one issue per week. I think this coming episode will be issue 251 for reference to where you are now in your catalog. And the most recent episode that just dropped as we are here on the air now, yesterday, we covered WCW Halloween Havoc 93, which was a really fun show to review. Good in-ring matches, but you used the term, quote, unsatisfying finish or ending in, I think, 7 of the 8 matches. So the booking itself wasn't the best, but the in-ring work actually was. So I can understand being someone sitting in the chair watching that pay-per-view in real time, really not walking away very fond of that, but watching it 30 years later, it's just a good pay-per-view to watch from a technical perspective. So there you go.
So search PW Torch on your podcast app, and you can sign up free for the PW Torch Day of the Cast, a different show every day of the week, different theme each day of the week. That's free, PW Torch, search on your podcast app. And while you're at it, search Wade Keller on your podcast app to subscribe to this, our Red Logo Show, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows following Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision, and also the Blue Logo Show, our weekly flagship, along with some classic interviews, some timeless interviews, and other best of and flashback content. All right, our phone number, if you want to join us on tonight's show, is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That flags you on our switchboard so that we know you want to be brought onto the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. I should know, too, speaking of post-shows and the daily cast, Greg Parks and Brandon LeClaire hosted the PW Torch Daily Cast's pay-per-view post-show. They were live streaming after Crown Jewel earlier today, and you can listen to their post-show for free by going to PW Torch, searching PW Torch on your podcast app. We also have a link on pwtorch.com. The roundtable that I hosted earlier with Todd Martin and Rich Fan is VIP exclusive, so you have to be a VIP member to hear that, but you can sign up through Patreon or through your Apple account on your iPhone, or with credit card, debit card, or PayPal. Lots of ways to go about signing up and getting access to our VIP podcast, pwtorch.com/govip. Final reminder there on how to sign up and get information on that. All right. With all that business out of the way, we've got emails and phone calls to get to, And we will start with Sam in Nebraska, our first caller up here. Sam, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. What's on your mind about tonight's collision?
Sure. Yeah, I've just been kind of busy. I haven't caught a whole lot of Collision or Dynamite the last few weeks. And this was just kind of an interesting show to kind of pop into because it was – it kind of seemed like they were, you know, kind of setting a table anew, I felt. Like, it didn't feel – even though I haven't been super updated on what's been going on, didn't feel like I was missing a lot, which I think is good because sometimes I've been a few weeks off and I just came back in and it seemed like there was just a bunch of assumed knowledge I didn't know. And, yeah, it was just kind of interesting seeing, like, different people that I hadn't seen in a while, it seemed like. Particularly, like, someone that I thought, it looked like, to me, like, Keith Lee looks like the best he's looked in a while. I thought he looked in pretty good shape. Yeah. And one thing I guess I was thinking about, and I don't know if you guys have answers on this, is what is going on with Collision when Full Gear in 2 weeks? Have they explained that yet? That's the one thing I was also thinking about.
A very special ROH-centric pre-taped edition. I don't know. I wasn't even thinking that far ahead.
I'll jump in real quick. Yeah. I want to say they might be airing on Friday, the day before. I feel like the 17th is the date for that next show or that show specifically.
For Collision.
For Collision that week. Yeah. I think it's the Friday that week. So they might extend that with Rampage, it feels like.
One thing they could do, and I wouldn't mind, is the old WWF main event, Heat format, and turn it into a pre-show, just aired earlier. Maybe shrink it to an hour so you don't burn people out. But just start at whatever time the pay-per-view starts. If it's 8 Eastern, just do air a one-hour Collision from 7 to 8 Eastern. Or do 2 hours if you want. I mean, burn people out. That's what Tony Khan likes to do.
Real quick on that, Wade. I think that's a great idea. I mean, you're trying to get more eyeballs into that pay-per-view, get some more buys for that pay-per-view. That seems like a logical choice to get, you know, the 500,000 to 600,000 people that watch Collision every week, get some of those fans invested in and, you know, put down $50.
Yeah. I'll send it back to you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's some – I really thought the show started with the kind of the return of the talking segments, and then I really just like how they made A.R. Fox and Swerve just kind of kick things off, you know, pretty intense and everything, and I liked how that started. I mean, obviously there's some stuff like, you know, I think we're at the point now, like, we've seen Archer be in the same role so many times, it's hard to ever take it seriously, in my opinion. He's just a Brian Cage kind of figure at this point, or just a big guy to basically come in and lose. But other than that, I mean, I thought it was fine for what it was. I guess I don't know. I'm not – just hadn't called it in a while, just thought I'd give a few thoughts there.
Yeah. Yeah, did it strike you? We kind of led in our discussion with it felt like a B show lineup in terms of stars. Did you notice that? Does it bother you? Do you
like that?
Because it seems like they're pushing some names who have been underutilized, and it just takes patience for them to seem like stars.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely noticed it because, like, just some of the guys that I really enjoy weren't on the show, and for a variety of reasons, because I know, like, Mox is in New Japan right now and everything. But yeah, I mean, it definitely felt like a B-level show, but it did like put a definite emphasis on like guys like I do think Irv is just a star in the making, and it made him seem important tonight. And obviously, like, Darby is, as you guys were talking, Darby's one of their guys they lean on a lot, and it made him seem important too. So yeah, I mean, it definitely felt like a lesser show. It didn't feel quite Rampage level, but yeah, I mean, it did feel like a lesser show, but it didn't feel like, I guess it didn't feel like I wasted my time, which I often do with Rampage. Maybe it felt a little more consequential. And
yeah,
I mean, that's why I don't watch Rampage.
I think so.
But like,
yeah,
when I have watched Rampage, I was like, why did I do this kind of thing? So
Patrick,
as the person who reports on that every week, you're killing me here, Sam. But I, you're not wrong.
So,
Sam.
I mean, it would be nice if there was a few bigger stars, but I felt they, you know, I felt they were maybe. If it, and this is all the follow-up, and this is where it gets tricky with AEW, is just like if they can do this for a few weeks of kind of focusing on these similar people, eventually they're going to feel more important, but they actually have to put in that time. And that sometimes is something we've seen in the past they don't like to do. So,
and pick the right people. Absolutely. Cool. Sam, I appreciate you chiming in. Any closing thoughts, or is that all?
No, not really. Just thanks for everything you do, and check out all the great VIP shows, such as Everything and The Fix.
Excellent. Great. Thanks, Sam. Good to hear from you. Patrick, I'm going to forget to ask if I don't ask this now. What do you think of Tony Schiavone joining the announced team and the chemistry with Kevin Kelly and Nigel McGuinness? I want, and the reason I say I don't want to forget to say this is I don't think anyone is going to email or bring it up, but I've wanted Kevin Kelly to do better, and I thought tonight he did better. He showed some research. He brought up some facts. You know, Nigel called him a nerd for knowing some stat, but that's fine. And so that was good. And Schiavone was bringing the energy and leading the way. You know, I mean, it's been a while since I made fun of Kevin Kelly's inflections, but they really were unacceptable in the way that he would talk, and everything would end like this, and every sentence ended that with that inflection. And it just, it was almost unlistenable, and it was really unprofessional. And it just needed someone to, you know, someone to just bluntly tell him, stop it. Schiavone brings more, but I wouldn't say that Schiavone's strengths typically were known to be the things that would fill in for Kevin Kelly's weaknesses. Kevin Kelly and Tony are affable, likable, casual people, but Tony's not Mr. Fact Guy or Mr. Stats. So to me, I think they're still trying to find their way. But and obviously, it was a real message sent to Kevin Kelly last week that he didn't get to call the Kenny Omega match when Ross stepped in and Schiavone stayed there. But I'm just kind of, you know, keeping an eye on it. I'm not super down on it, not super high on it, but I'm paying attention and trying to kind of get a sense of, okay, is it clear Schiavone's the veteran in the lead, and is Kevin Kelly okay with that and actually kind of shining in that third man analyst role? Are they tripping over or stepping on each other in terms of who's calling big moves? Again, I feel like Schiavone knows more of the moves than Kelly at this point, and that's not great because I don't think Tony would even – brag that he's Mr. the guy who knows all the names of the moves, but I think he's still a step ahead of Kevin Kelly, which is very odd to say. So what are your thoughts on the announced team?
Yeah, I was trying to tune in, you know, with my ears a little bit more this time around, tonight specifically, to see if I could pick up on any of that. And I think they drive pretty well, to your point. I do think – I don't find them really tripping over themselves. I think Nigel's kind of his own, you know, on the heel side. So he's kind of has his own role nailed down pretty well, although he's not, you know, 100% perfect either. But as far as Tony goes, I think Tony's getting a little bit more accustomed to being back into that role. You can kind of tell as far as his hesitation, maybe some starts and stops and how he goes to break even. I kind of picked up on that. It just feels a little bit unnatural for him because he hasn't had to do it for years and a while. So that all said, I'm liking it so far. I am a fan of Kevin Kelly's work in New Japan, and I know a lot of people that we talked about, you and I, last time I was on Wade, you know, that's not something that the standard fan out there is aware of. Like, not everyone's watching other promotions like that. So I understand, you know, the reasoning behind that. I just hope that Kevin Kelly is not, you know, the odd man out officially, you know, just getting back to, you know, potentially being the main play-by-play guy, or has the ability to, you know, call those matches like you mentioned, him being out on the outs last week with the Kenny Omega MJF match. So I'm hopeful for that too. And like you said, I think he's getting a little bit better here and there. So I have some hope that, you know, he'll be able to regain that role. But Tony Schiavone's fine in that spot. I think it's Clearly a different vibe. You know, we see the Dynamite team is so rock solid with Excalibur at the helm there. This one's a little bit shakier, but I think they're feeling themselves out. And, you know, just I'm hopeful that it'll smooth itself out as we keep going here.
How do you feel about Nigel?
I'm a big fan of Nigel. There's a few things that are a little just kind of fall flat. Like this tonight, for example, I have a note here. The six-man Ring of Honor tag champs, or excuse me, I just did it. The six-man champions, he called them the tag champions, two-thirds of the tag champions, I think he said. And then he corrected himself, but then used the term tag champions again. So things like that, I think it's kind of a rarity to call something like that out for him, in my opinion. He does play up a pretty nice heel commentary that you don't and we haven't seen, and at least on the AEW side, in a while. So Taz, I guess, does that to some degree, but not as all in as no pun intended as Nigel McGuinness does.
I get a kick out of Nigel, like his over enunciation of words, like Christian. Every syllable gets its full attention.
Yes.
It's full. Inflection. It's amusing.
Sometimes you just think he's having a good time, even if no one reacts to him. He's just doing his thing, and he laughs at himself. So
yeah, exactly. All right. So let's go to an email here from Jorad from Canada. Good evening, Jorad. I wanted to send in a quick email giving some praise for the rebuild of the LFI group. The vignettes were nice, and then the return last week and the entrance tonight all presented this group as big stars. What do you think? Patrick, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm a little confused about them being faces, or maybe they're kind of the dreaded, I'm going to say it, Wave, just don't get mad at me, the tweener role. Did they come off as tweeners tonight? But, yeah.
Okay, I'm mad.
Like...
You set me off.
Okay, show's over.
I don't think they're tweeners. I think they're baby faces who want to do the right thing, but not hang out and be pals. So,
which is
fine. Like, there's people in our lives who are like that. They're good people, but they don't want to hang out with you. But they'd be there for you if you needed them. But then they want to go do their own thing. Like, that's kind of where they are, I guess. Yeah.
No, that's fair. And I think you're right on. They did play up the face role. And people responded to them tonight. I mean, Roosh got a great reaction throughout. I thought that was one of the big takeaways for me in the main event. People seem to be really into him. And I would not have pegged him as a good baby face. So maybe, you know, we'll see where that goes. But to answer the question here, I'm all for this faction. It was a little bit awkward to have them disappear and then have these, you know, random vignettes play every other week maybe for a while, and all of a sudden they're back, which is great. I'm happy to see them. So I'm high on the ability to see where this goes. I think using someone like Preston Vance, you know, that young guy in that role is good. So that's a start there. Roosh being kind of the catalyst and the main event player, so to speak, in that role. And then Dralistico, I don't know much about him yet. I know they just signed him to a deal. So, you know, at least he's locked in now. So, I'm high on the potential here.
Yeah. I actually like the idea of them, like, not doing the handshake, but walking past them and patting their shoulder. Like, we got our own way of acknowledging you, and we're not going to be buddies and handshake, but hey, you know, we're there for you. It gives us something to kind of read into and talk about, and it's different than usual. And I got a kick out of Cash and Dax just going, well, let's shake each other's hands then. We're both standing here with our hands out. So I thought certainly clever. All right. Let's see. Another email here from Azan, who says, how do you feel about Lexi Nair's interview skills? She seems more natural than most. Patrick, I'll throw you first.
Yeah, I see her a lot on – obviously, we saw her a lot tonight, and she's been used a lot on Rampage as well. I thought – I think she's gotten a lot better. I think the emailer is correct as far as, you know, she's gotten a little bit more natural. She doesn't have to do a ton, but what she's doing comes off a lot better than, you know, the first few times we saw her. I wish the – and the meat of the interviews themselves were a little bit better. Not necessarily her fault. I just think the way they're being directed, like tonight, there were a few that, again, the Andrade one comes to mind immediately. She asks some of the same question as last week and the week before, and, you know, we're not getting anywhere there. One or two other ones come up tonight as well, but her role in them is totally fine. And I think she's doing a good job.
Yeah, I think she does a good job too. There are times where I think she's kind of put in an awkward position in terms of what's being asked of her to how to react or what to say. But I think she's growing into the role well. And yeah, I mean, I would give it a thumbs up. You know, I think she does a good job. And yeah, I agree with Sasan saying she seems more natural than most.
Yeah, absolutely. And the last thing that comes to mind for Lexi is it's nice to have someone organically they've built into that role versus someone they're just pulling. And this is not a slight on Renee. I think Renee is like the ultimate person that you want in that role. But just to have someone that AEW put their stamp on is really cool.
And I think what you want with people, with the interviewers, is for them not to be just total pushovers mm-hmm. and just big dorks and just cowering in fear when wrestlers are mean to them. And I, frankly, if I'm Tony Khan, I would want the wrestlers to treat the interviews with respect, with an exception that is kind of approved and designated and becomes their thing. I mean, there's just examples of that over the years where it's worked. Other times it's been kind of annoying or overdone. But yeah, if you're going to have an interviewer, I just like even heels. I mean, I think they should just sort of understand their gripe isn't with the interviewer and they get that. Like, I think it's such a like a shortcut trope, cheap heat thing for heels to be mean and rude to interviewers. And if everybody's doing it, it just feels like no one, there's no boss going, hey, pick on people your own size and stop it. And I think, For heels to feel like they're getting away with something when they do things, you want to have some sense of order with leadership. And one of the places that would start is, hey, don't be crude and intimidating and rude to these interviewers who are just doing their jobs.
Yeah, a great example that comes to mind for me is Iron Sheik and Mean Gene. You know, he was a dastardly heel in the 80s, and yet he would always start his interviews with, I respect you. Gene Mean, whatever, however you would refer to him. But so there's a good example right there.
Yes, yes. I mean, there's old Road Warrior interviews in their AWA run when they were doing the best interviews of their career, I would argue, in the mid-80s, mm-hmm. right after Hogan left and Stan Hansen was around. Then it was kind of the last gasp of the big one of the big three, AWA, in terms of the brand names in wrestling, and along with WWF and NWA. And the Ken Resnick, Hawk in Road Warrior Hawk, had that going, where Resnick was just such – it just intimidated Ken Resnick so much. And then Larry Nelson, the late Larry Nelson, was always intimidated by Stan Hansen and did a good job chemistry-wise there. And then you had, you know, Jesse Ventura and Mean Gene Okerlund, and Jesse would give Mean Gene had a different type of dynamic during his peak era in the AWA before he became a bit of a caricature of himself in the WWF, and he had a different dynamic with everybody, but Gene kept his dignity more in the AWA than he did in the WWF, and I think a lot of people grew up on kind of the post-territory era where, unfortunately, you know, Vince McMahon's influence and then some people who were not familiar with wrestling history and other ways to do things kind of ended up with derivative versions of bad ideas. So, yeah, I'm glad Azan brought that up, and I think Lexi is on the higher end of interviews right now. Okay, number two, why did AEW pick Wichita, Kansas to host tonight? AEW has been hurting in crowd numbers lately, but Tony Khan, a lifelong fan, should know that town has been dead since the Central States wrestling days. Yeah, WrestleTix had them at 2,845 tickets as of this morning. They only had the venue set up for 3,200, and that doesn't mean that's the most they can fit. That's the most they hope to fit. People get confused sometimes by what that WrestleTix says when they say current setup. The buildings can sometimes hold 10,000 people, but they only set it up for 3,000 because they block out the rest of the seats because they sell them only when they're packed tight. You know, they want everyone on camera. But point said, yeah, it's one of the lower numbers for Collision, but that's part of the problem, Patrick, with Collision is they have to go to some of these towns now where it's not going to be a big crowd because they're burning out the other markets.
Absolutely, yeah. No, I was going to say it's inevitable that they have to go to some of these towns. And I think the worst part as a viewer on on TV is just the darkness that that resonates or exudes through the television. It's just they do a pretty good job of shooting around the empty seats. Really, everything on the camera side is more or less lately been completely empty, but they've done a pretty good job of letting you know or not know that's the case. The problem I have, and I assume most viewers have, is just the darkened arenas that it is. It kind of exudes early WCW, in like early 90s WCW. And I know the product is a lot better than that, but it's just not a good look and feel. It's kind of a depressing state in a way. That all said, though, and tonight's a good example, and I'd love to, you know, if we get an emailer or someone who has any thoughts on this, I think the crowds have been really good. I mean, the crowds certainly react. They're, you know, it sounds like they're mic'd pretty well to begin with, but they do react to a lot of things. Tonight was kind of hit and miss in certain areas, but when, you know, more or less when AEW wanted the crowd to react to the stars and to something that was going on in the ring, they did that. They did that pretty well. So that's not been the issue, but yeah, it's definitely just filling those arenas. And again, like I said, the lighting aspect, which you're just trying to get around the fact that there's a lot of empty seats in these shows.
And with the crowd too, even when they do react, it sounds like 600 people reacting, not 4, 5, 6, 7,000. You know, like the reactions tonight, it did kind of feel echoey and it felt sometimes like dozens of people doing a chant. And it does give a small-time feel to the show when that's – you know, I don't think people are consciously thinking about it, but WWE is doing so well with crowds these days and size-wise. And so they're setting the bar high for what to expect in terms of how things sound and how things look and the dark corners and the dark upper deck and the tight camera angles, because you just feel claustrophobic sometimes the way they shoot. And because they're showing small clusters of fans and they're showing just the stage but nothing – surrounding it, because it's all empty seats or black tarp, and the camera, it can only point in certain ways without, because they don't want to show, you know, 2/3 of the arena just completely empty. So it is it's a problem, and it's one of the reasons in my Keller's take where I listed, you know, 10 announcements Tony Khan should make instead of just one of them was cancel collision. And it's not because like Saturday night wrestling isn't fun. It's just I'd be fine with collision, one, if they had a little more star power depth established, but also, if it didn't also have the collateral damage of Dynamite, having smaller crowds, because they can only go to so many of these big cities that draw good crowds so often before they burn out the crowd, and they're already, just to maintain the crowds that they have, slashing prices with deals, and it just feels dangerous to me. And I've been consistent with this since Collision was announced, that they were going to end up with issues trying to sell. Going back to the beginning of Dynamite, I was like, I'm worried 4, 5, 6 months from now if they're going to be able to draw crowds for Dynamite once they get through that initial run of everybody seeing this new brand. And they did fine, but it was hard to tell with the pandemic what would have happened. But now, you know, I said that again with Collision, and it feels like scaling back expectations of how many times fans are going to be filling your buildings would be good. But a lot of negatives come with that. I know the bean counter is like, oh, but they lose all this TV revenue. I just want them to see Major League and be able to create stars and survive longer, even if making big profit gets pushed down the road. I just think they're putting expansion ahead of the density of quality and leaving fans wanting more. Whole other topic, but we're talking Collision, so it's relevant in that way.
Yeah, the only thing I'll add to that is this tonight was the first time that thought crossed my mind watching, was like, maybe this is the show that they shouldn't have after some time. And you already laid out the pros and cons of that, so I won't belabor those. But that, just to add that, tonight was the first time that I ever really thought about that.
Yeah, yep. All right, let's see, back to Azan. He says, in my opinion, Max Caster dragged Anthony Bones and Billy Gunn as an act because he wants to be the comedian, while Bones tries to become more focused through his ring work and trying to climb the ladder of AEW. So let's talk about that segment. My characterization of it when it was all done was it felt like a house show had ended and some wrestlers came out because they just wanted to josh around and joke around and hang out with the fans for a little bit. And it went too long. Even if it didn't go too long, we'd have had things to critique about this storyline. But man, did it come across as, you know, well, I guess that's all the time we have. And Billy Gunn's pointing at fans with signs. And man, it was just weird television. And I'm curious how the minute by minutes do. Not that that should define everything about what you do on TV, but it'd be interesting to look at the viewership trend during that period. Patrick, talk as much as you want about what you liked and did not like about that segment.
Yeah, so this is a little bit more tame than I expected. I expected more cringe here, but it was maybe cringy in different ways. It was just actually very boring. which is saying something because I was not excited for this to begin with. I don't know. Did they have, and this is rhetorical, but did they have an idea when they went to the ring what the heck they were actually going to talk about? Because they ran out of steam minutes within, you know, we got the MJF video package, but they had nothing to actually say. And by the time they were done saying it, this actually, I have a note here that says, oh my God, this actually turns into a match now. And I wish I timed how long the full segment went from the actual celebration to the match. The match went a lot longer than I would expect as well. But yeah, this was just really, I knew going in it was going to be ridiculous, but it was ridiculous in a boring way. And then just turned to into a nothing match, from my opinion.
I think this, boorish. Yeah. It boorish. Like it was like there were moments where they just seemed a little too enamored with their own bit. Mm-hmm, and that's where I say it felt like, oh, if you're in the intimacy of a crowd and you're interacting, it's like, oh, they're loose with us.
Sure.
But yeah. But it felt boorish. Yeah. Like, aren't we amazing being so entertaining with this sort of irreverent thing that we're doing with a couple puns, scissors and 69. Yeah.
The other thing that's interesting is, you know, obviously the 69, we get the tongue-in-cheek aspect of that, but who have they actually faced and beat and feuded with in these 69 days for them to be so happy and exuberant of them being these exalted trios champions? I mean, from a character perspective, why do they think they're that incredible? And these are baby faces, by the way. They've really not beaten anyone since they've won the titles. And, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, I know they've defended them, but there's really not been a big-time feud for this group. And yet here we are, and we are watching them, to your point, you know, watching them kind of pat themselves on the back.
So talk about the MJF Max Caster storyline and what happened today and how you felt about it. I ran a Twitter poll asking if Max Caster used to be cool, but he's not anymore, or was he never cool, or he was and he still is. And about 2/3 of the people thought he was cool before this started. And half of those people no longer think he's cool based on this weird thing with MJF. What do you think? How familiar are you with the genesis of this? And do you think it's making for fun TV that might hit a certain demographic, or is it just a bad idea? Where are you on it?
Yeah, I think it's just a bad idea. I mean, I think I'm pretty familiar with it as to what they've told us on television, or at least they've alluded to. But that said, I feel like I've missed a ton of context that they just never told us on screen, whether that's on Twitter or just social and somewhere in social Instagram. I have no idea what I'm supposed to know that I don't, and I know that there's something out there that I just don't have context around. Add me to the list of those folks that think Max Caster used to be cool and is no longer. I don't know where the 360 or 180 turn for him, you know, came and went, or the decision behind that turn, because I thought he was supposed to be the coolest of the bunch with, you know, him coming out with the raps, very clever raps, still does that. So that still kind of contradicts what his character's been doing. This character development makes him really look like one of the biggest loser characters in the company at the moment. He's just a real big doof, and with little to no context behind why he's doing this. And the fact that MJF apparently has such a low bar all of a sudden for, you know, becoming friends or at least liking people. This guy has been stalking him, has been very awkward and weird toward him, and takes one belt shot to the face, which is, hey, that's admirable. But now he's accepting of him. So I don't know. That makes MJF look silly too. I'm just wondering, this, to the MJF side, what in the world was this guy supposed to be doing if Adam Cole was still around? Because this feels like a pivot that they pivoted the wrong way toward. So I'm not sure. Yeah, that's I'll stop there because there's a lot more I can probably say, but it's just a lot of confusing elements and notions here as far as where this is all going.
And it came across at first that Max Caster was crushing on him, that he wanted to go on a date or other things with MJF, that he was coming out as bisexual, or I don't know if he had been super clear about where his orientation was before that. Obviously Anthony Bones has been open about being gay, but it also was like, oh, it's just, it's something else. It's sort of this childish innocence. I don't know if you can say, I don't know, maybe that's stretching it in terms of stalking MJF the way that he was, But the story, the genesis of it was on social media, and then it gets dropped on the TV. The announcers aren't sure how to react, but I wish a little more thought was put into how the announcers were supposed to react. Like, I just think Casterbones and Billy should have, and NMJF should have communicated more to the announcers. Like, here's what we're going for, and here's kind of, I think, how we want Caster to be framed so people don't have it left up to their imagination what's going on, unless they deliberately just wanted people to hear their imagination. This is a side, like, Caster was more serious rapping coming to the ring tonight. He wasn't being, like, yelled at and then having that sort of bashful grin. I don't even know how to describe it. When,
no, that's a good description. Yeah.
Snapping at him. So it felt like this was a little change in tone, and maybe they're shifting to MG, you know, I was waiting for MGF to say, Adam Cole taught me it's okay to have more than one friend, so maybe Max, I can be your friend. But Max didn't just want to be MGF's friend. Like, he sort of, like, got tingles when he touched MJF walking past him, you know, like, it was just, but I don't know, maybe that's, is Caster supposed to be this, like, man-child who sees MJF as a celebrity? I mean, they're peers, they train together, so, but have they even thought this through, or did they decide to do something that would be kind of funny and goofy, and it might get some traction on social media? I don't know.
Yeah, and all those questions are really valid, because they haven't outright told us, or, you know, been clear with what the intention here is. All those possibilities you laid out, at least at one time in this whole scenario, were potential routes they were taking. And yet we're, you know, what 4 weeks into this, maybe five, you know, give or take whenever this started, there's really not much more clarity other than MJF softening to the fact of being friends with him or that group. Like, that's all we're getting so far. Not any clarity into what Max Caster's role or, you know, what he wants out of this. It's very odd. And it's, you know, if he is, you know, infatuated with him, fine. Like, just come out and say it. Like, there's nothing wrong with that necessarily. It's just the unclarity that it's just frustrating as a viewer. Like, what am I supposed to take from this? And using it in any character is frustrating. But using it in, you know, with your world champion who is in a feud, a legitimate world title feud with Jay White, being hunted down by, you know, 2 to 3 other contenders. So, you know, there's a seriousness to the character on one side, and yet MJF has to deal with this type of just silliness on the other side. It just doesn't really equate. You shouldn't be doing these two types of paths for your champion at any one given time, if at all.
Where were you with Max Caster before this? Because before he showed this side of himself or went this direction, I genuinely thought he had a distinct charisma from the, like, mm-hmm. early on in AEW. There's something there that doesn't just blend in. I think there's a lot of people who kind of, you know, they just blend in. They've got just casual, like, everyday person charisma. You know, it doesn't jump out the face. Caster, there's something distinct that you can market and build on. And now it just feels, I don't know. I'm curious, where were you before this? And do you think this hurts him a lot or a little, or it's just easily regained or what?
I'd like to think it's easily regained. It depends on how further they go down the road with this, although they're getting pretty far at this moment. To answer your first question, I was high on him. I was high on both, you know, him and Bowens as a team. I actually thought Caster was the star of the two before, you know, before this development and character development of Caster. I actually saw Bowens as the lesser then. As the two of them have progressed in their world tag title range and really in the trios range, I think Bowens has really exceeded him in so many areas, especially on the mic, which really surprises me. I did not think that he had the ability to get to that level with Caster being his, you know, his counterpart. So, you know, yeah, I was certainly high on him. And I think he has the ability to there again and kind of regain that. But again, I'm a little concerned that they've gone too far here, that it could be more of a challenge than anything. So the sooner they break away from this, probably the better.
Do you think Billy Gunn has been on overall an asset or a drawback for where you thought the Acclaimed would be otherwise at this point?
I think generally speaking, he's an asset. I think he still gets the pops. He still gets the crowd reaction. If you're there live, you know, people seem to be into it. Whether you're, you know, that's a lot different, obviously, than, you know, being a TV viewer thinking this is, you know, tired, boorish, et cetera. I think overall, he to date has been positive for that group. When they lose the trios titles, it might be time to start, you know, put him to the back again, whether he's officially, you know, gone, retired, et cetera, or just kind of, in a lesser role, still meaningful maybe for crowd pops, et cetera, but in a lesser role would probably be ideal sooner than later.
Yeah. I mean, I know the nostalgia of seeing Billy Gunn has something going for it, and he does seem to be genuinely having fun, and it is fresh and better than, you know, whatever he was doing before and, you know, a nostalgia act or whatever. So, I mean, I'm more against it than for it, but I feel like it's gotten over enough that doesn't matter how I feel. You know, like, I shouldn't say it doesn't matter, but I guess it has me kind of second-guessing how strongly I should feel about that. I just think the Acclaimed were on a trajectory to be something special but a little more serious than Billy Gunn's, you know, like these young guys who Billy Gunn is just having fun with. And I worry that perception is there. But maybe they've got more TV time. Maybe, you know, there's a different generation of fans who think of the Acclaimed as a bigger deal because they're not lost in the mix. And so, you know, maybe he is giving them enough of a rub.
Yeah, I see your point there. I think where it worries me is, in addition to what you're saying, it worries me with the trios titles. And, you know, we can, again, have a different show all about the value of the AEW titles, whatever, which one you're talking about. But the trios titles, I mean, like I said, what have they actually done as champions to date? So, I mean, that's an element of whether it's Billy Gunn directly or just them being in this silly mode at the moment that is affecting the value of those titles as well.
Yeah. All right. Over to question number 4 from Adon. I'm looking forward to hearing what Wade says about Keith Lee and Daniel Garcia's big matches coming up next week. So I mentioned it just sort of briefly earlier that, you know, they used Collision to promote Dynamite. I'll start with Danny Garcia. I think that, and you alluded to it, like just going on Rampage and saying, I want a title match, and then the champ going, sure, I'll give you a title match. It just cheapens the whole process. Bad enough that there's battle royals or, you know, whatever. I mean, world title matches should be a bigger deal. It's same thing with the stipulation of Mark Briscoe going, hey, Jay, I want to match against you and put your title shot on the line. Like, stop it. MJF wrestling against Garcia is a really cool match. And you can present it as if Garcia wins, he's going to enter the conversation for a world title shot if he stacks some more wins together. But it would be a big start to getting his name in the mix, and it would show he's progressing. Like, you can tell that story, and it's believable. You don't need to put the title on the line for MJF and Danny to be a draw because, frankly, nobody believes Danny Garcia is going to beat MJF for the title, so now we know the outcome of the match. Same thing with Jay White and Mark Briscoe. Briscoe's not going to win the chance to headline Full Gear, so now we know the outcome of the match, where there's a little bit more doubt, not a lot, but a little bit more doubt if they don't add that stip. So it's just that aspect's frustrating. I think Garcia and MJF is going to be a really good match. I would really like to see something occur in the match where Danny puts up a really big fight against MJF, like really is competitive. And MJF just eventually just says, you know what? You got to stop doing that silly dance, you know, going, and sadly MJF's not the person to say this because he's more exciting his Google trending numbers. But don't worry about if you're popular online. What you need to worry about is winning in the ring and staying focused and, frankly, having some dignity. So let's get you back to who you are and how your career can grow into the best possible. It can grow in the best possible way. So there's a story to tell there. So those are my thoughts on that. What do you think, Patrick?
Yeah, a lot of things that I wanted to say you hit on. There's a few other thoughts though. They do title eliminator matches, right? Like, that's a thing in this company. You know, they could have easily had this match, which I agree with you. I think it's going to be great. I think Danny Garcia is really great in the ring, and every time you see him, I come away, you know, more impressed, to be honest, aside from the dancing. But this is a moment where, okay, you're right. You know he's not going to win the title. Well, how will we make it a title eliminator match? It gives him a reason to, you know, fight hard against the champion, get the opportunity down the road, not screw up, quote unquote, the pay-per-view main event, which we know wouldn't happen anyway. And then, of course, give fans a reason to think he could actually win. The other thing that this bothers me doing is he literally has not done much at all in the ring for weeks and weeks, right? He's been in some tag matches, six-mans, etc. He just wins one singles match on Rampage, which, again, as the caller earlier said, I know this already, but most people don't watch Rampage. So where and what does that make him deserve to call his shot there? And it also makes people like Wardlow look really dumb because Wardlow is really wants a title shot. He wants Max and MJF's title. So why don't you just get on the mic, Wardlow, and tell us you want the title and you want it next week? Like, that should be the easiest thing to do. And yet now he looks kind of like an idiot. And, you know, I know who else is hunting for him. I don't know. There's a few people now hunting for that. Oh, Samoa Joe. Samoa Joe comes to mind. So there's just this web of just ridiculousness when you can just have anyone literally win one match and call not only, you know, just any title shot. Oh, no, I want the world champion next week, and you're going to get it without issue. Like, that, there's a problem there.
I agree. And it just – it comes across as short-term hot-shotting, and it would just be so nice if there was – like a sense of something happening this week, more often, and they do this sometimes, but like, if you're going to give away an MJF match against Danny Garcia, which should be great, when the idea comes in your mind, don't just do it a few days later. Like, oh, mm-hmm. Let's do that in January. Let's do it in December, and let's tell a story to get us there, as you kind of laid out.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
The only thing that was positive tonight with calling the shot was at least Keith Lee stepped up to Samoa Joe, who was present. And Samoa Joe could actually say, yes, I accept your challenge, instead of, you know, randomly telling someone, in, you know, or an arena on a microphone and Tony Khan saying, yeah, sure, sounds good.
Yes. So Keith Lee and Samoa Joe, I'll have you start, Patrick.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be I think that's a good match on paper. Again, I'm kind of bothered in general by the fact that one, you have an interview segment in the back that inevitably gets interrupted by someone just walking by, or you know, probably already in view of whoever is getting interviewed, but they have to pretend they're surprised to see them, and then just can call their shot. But again, I didn't mind it as much for the reason I gave earlier. On paper, I mean, the visual between these two is really exciting. Actually, I wish there was a little bit more behind Keith Lee as far as, you know, momentum, but maybe this is that opportunity to gain that momentum back for him. So I think that'll be a positive. And Joe always comes prepared and brings it. So I'm looking forward to this one.
I am too. I think it's an interesting test for Keith Lee. You know, that Samoa Joe is good with, and really for Samoa Joe too, they're both better against smaller wrestlers who create a lot of movement, who bounce off of them and they can bounce into. So their moveset is just going to be so different. And, I, you know, if Keith Lee comes out and, you know, has a bit of a throwback match, then great. You know, maybe that's a sign there's more you can do with him. You don't have to hide him in six-man tags or tag matches. But I don't know. I am curious to see what they're able to put together and the story that they tell. I really am. Joe's been good lately. I mean, he's not the Joe 15 years ago in terms of his – you know, speed, and he's, you know, put on weight and he's aged and all that, but he's adjusted his style and he wrestles in a different way. And he's very smart in the way that he tells his stories in the ring. So it wasn't a match I expected. But it's a match I'm intrigued by. So let's see what they come up with.
Yeah. I would say that's just a match example that does work when you can just throw it together and get people to react, you know, viscerally to say, wow, I never thought of that. That looks pretty cool versus, you know, hamstringing a lot of these other examples we were giving earlier. I think that, you know, there's a nuance to that, but I think this one certainly works.
From a standpoint of what they should or could be doing with Keith Lee, I mean, maybe we just don't have enough information about, you know, what they've asked of him and what other wrestlers are saying about him and how easy he is to work with or how much faith they have in him. I mean, there's just things – I hear stuff, but it's like we don't know everything about that. But did you expect or hope to see more from Keith Lee by now? And do you think they're underutilizing him based on what you've seen on TV.
Yes, I do. I did expect to see more from him, but I have to say I've kind of given up on the fact that we won't. Maybe I'll be surprised. Maybe this is the start of something. But I've gotten to the point of, you know, whatever we've seen to date is what we're going to see. And it's not all that exciting, although I know, you know, years ago he had a lot of backers on the indie scene and other promotions. I didn't see as much of that work, so it's more hearsay for me personally. But yeah, I think I'm just in a point where I gotta admit this, I almost forgot he was on the roster when he came out tonight. Every time I see him, it's like, oh yeah, here he is. I kind of forgot about you. And that's not a good thing to be in that role. So again, prove me wrong, prove others wrong, but that's kind of where my mind is on Keith Lee at the moment.
Yeah. Ah, boy. I mean, when they're taking Collision in a direction where it seems like, all right, we're going to try to get more out of the people we weren't getting as much out of as some people thought we should. Keith Lee's high on that list of, you know, sort of reclamation projects, I guess. Mm-hmm. And if they can, you know, give him a showcase, a little bit out of the Dynamite spotlight, but give him kind of an incentive and kind of challenge him to step up and be better than he has been, and put him in a position where he doesn't want to embarrass himself. He wants to go out there and have a good match, and maybe they can turn him into something more yet. I say all that sort of deliberately slowly because I'm just, you know, I'm trying to be guarded in my framing of this as having any optimism about it. There was the women's match tonight, Willow Knight and Gillen, Emi Sakura. They had the backstage promo with Chris Statlander talking to Sky Blue about her decision, and Sky Blue kind of dissing Chris a little bit and saying, "This I did it out of loyalty to Willow." What have you thought of that storyline as it's been told on all of AEW TV? Has been told well enough on the bigger shows? And how are all three in a different place now than they were a month or so ago when they kind of started really getting into this story?
Yeah, all good questions. I think Sky Blue's probably come out the best so far in all, you know, if you're mapping just those three. Willow's kind of where she's been, which is fine in general, although I shouldn't say that. I don't think it's fine, actually, because she, you know, she was the Owen Hart tournament champion on the women's side and hasn't really done much since. Chris Statlander probably comes out looking the worst, one, because she's not feuding, you know, with anyone for the title that she holds. And two, why is she wasting, you know, time asking Sky Blue and Willow these questions every week? I mean, it's kind of feels like it's been a month now at this point between the three of them having the same conversation in front of the camera, and where we've really gotten nowhere. And it just makes Statlander look kind of silly and pathetic in a way. And she's not doing she's not a good interviewer to begin with, so that's not helping. I have a note here. I mean, they just feel like they're not getting direction or notes every time they do these interviews because it's the same outcome. It's poor acting. It's poor presentation. And it's just kind of a waste of time at this point. If you did what you're doing on screen in the ring, I think it would have been okay. I wouldn't probably bash it as much as I am right now. I realize I'm being pretty harsh. But I think these backstage interviews are really souring this all for me, and I think a lot of people.
Is Statlander, when you watch her, do you have an idea of how she would be best presented as a character and how to frame her?
I would – this sounds harsh. I wouldn't have her talk. I would have her she has a good presence in the ring. She gets the job done. And I would kind of use her maybe as a muscle in a way, as a dominant champion as a way, and do little talking and just have her show her, you know, value, you know, in the ring specifically. That's kind of how I would frame it. I know that's, like I said, that's harsh, but I think that might be to the best of her benefit for the moment.
Yeah. I just don't know. where is Willow on your ranking of, AEW's women's division right now in terms of where she stands now and how focused they should be on building her up?
Yeah, I really like her. I'm a big fan of her. I think I was at the Ring of Honor pay-per-view, which was in New Jersey a few months ago, and she got a tremendous pop, tremendous reaction, which I know is not uncommon for her. She seems to do that everywhere she goes. So I'm a big proponent of her. I think that they can do a better job utilizing her. Again, this wishy-washy storyline that she's in is just kind of confusing. It felt like they were almost about to pull the trigger on a heel turn for her. I feel less and less, but likely that's the case at this point, at least the last two or three shows. So that's a good thing. Do not do that, please, Tony. I mean, I think they can put more steam behind her for sure, and I think that she's held her own. And tonight was a really good match. I mean, I'm not surprised technically her and Emi Sakura had a great, technical match. I have issues elsewhere for that build, but for Willow, I think she's definitely a top three, maybe two babyface for that division, or should be rather.
Yeah, I think we know that she's enthusiastic. So there's that. What else is there about her? Like, what do we know? What else when someone says, hey, I like her. She seems likable. She's got good energy. Do you know what else you would convey to a new fan that would explain who she is at all?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know what comes to mind. I mean, yeah, genuine baby face, high energy, likability, but that kind of all says the same thing in a different way.
Yeah.
So I don't know if there's much layer or depth given to her yet.
Like, does she have aspirations to, like, does she have a serious side? Does she have a backstory? It doesn't have to be like a movie character. Like, it doesn't have to have tons of layers, but I kind of want to just know a little bit more about her than this. So
yeah, and the time to do that in reality was she won the women's tournament for the Owen Hart tournament, and they didn't follow up with that. Now she actually ended up winning the New Japan Strong women's title too, and that was for those that follow that was a little fluky because she technically wasn't supposed to win that title at the time, but again, they didn't really lean into that as they should have or could have. So I mean, there were times, those are two times that come to mind, that they could have answered some of those questions or added those layers, like you said, Wade, but they've kind of lacked the follow through.
Mark Briscoe is back, got as much mic time and personality development as he's gotten yet. What do you think of this character? Is it too goofy and feels put on, or does it feel maybe a little too authentic and entertaining? Like, where are you on him? Because it seems like they're committed to getting him some extra TV time at this point.
Yeah, I'm okay with them giving him extra TV time. I think the match itself, getting to that first, this is the first time since he was in the AEW that I thought, okay, he's looking good here. He looked physically good, and his ring work looked good to me. I know it was six-man, so you didn't see a ton of his work, but still, I was impressed there. I'm not impressed by this character personally. I'm not sure who likes it. I think maybe, with his brother, and him tagging, that was balanced a little bit better. I think, he needs some sort of balance to kind of offset the silliness of that character. But I'm hoping there's something that he can, like, I guess similar to Willow in a way, where he can kind of show us another side. And we know he has it. He's been wrestling for 20-some years and mostly in Ring of Honor, so there's an edge there. But this character doesn't really work for me in its current form.
Yes, yes. Trying to think, anything else in your notes that you want to bring up from the show tonight? Roderick Strong, any thoughts on – I thought it was – I like Roderick. He's one of the attempts at comedy that I think is working, him diving into the ring, getting a cheap shot in, and then acting like, oh, he's totally physically spent. Yeah. This is, I thought, where Nigel was the best. Sometimes Nigel, I think, is trying to just BS us. And other times, like, in a way that feels I'm trying to think, decide between condescending and patronizing. I guess condescending. But then on that, I felt it was like just deadpan dry sense of humor, like Cody's sense of humor on his show when he talk about things going on that reality show. It was deadpan. Oh, come on, Tony, that used all his energy. He needs help getting back into his wheelchair. Like, after Shivani was, skeptical earlier that he needed to be in the wheelchair. So yeah, like and by the way, Roderick Strong's the only one on these shows who should be allowed to yell like Adam, because it's obnoxious. MJF, I'm not going to rant a little bit on MJF. He didn't need to sit in that echoey locker room and yell at us in all caps the whole time. Like, he just needs to stop doing that. There's never been an MJF promo that's been good where it's mostly him yelling, and there's no part of a promo where he yelled where I think it made the promo better. I have a thing, Dolph Ziggler, but I was just, he thought the key to a good promo and nobody had figured it out yet. It's just yelling at the top of your lungs into the microphone. But I don't want MJF, who's way more talented than Dolph Ziggler, way more talented than, whatever. He's in the top tier. I mean, of promo guys, he doesn't need to resort to that. Roderick Strong does. He's got to be a gimmick. He's a plain, ordinary guy. Nothing jumps off the screen. So he's got to do little cute, little fun gimmick things to try to jump out, but MJF doesn't. So I kind of hit a couple topics there, but talk about Roddy, but also talk about if the yelling gets to you as much as it does me, because it's not, doesn't tip for everybody.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. I think this really works for me. I think where it didn't work for me was the vignettes we got, the video packages we get with Adam Cole at his house. Like, that was a different story, but Strong has been strong. Can I say that? Strong has been good in this role.
You can.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. No, he's been really good in this role. The Kingdom's been pretty good too. I mean, they started this really cold, with their characters in this company, but I think they've warmed up pretty nicely. They're not doing a ton, but just the subtleties that they bring to the table too has been nice. It does. Again, this is another example. This is rhetorical, but what have they been doing at this point if Adam Cole was still healthy? It feels like they're in limbo at the moment, which is a shame. But again, if they can ride this wave a little bit longer, doing what they're doing, maybe add a layer or two here as the weeks go on, the months, hopefully Cole will probably be back sooner than that, but we'll see. I'm just really, just the question for me is, what the heck do they all do between now and whenever he does come back? Or is there something else that kind of another wrinkle to this that plays into the development of the story? That is that side. No, they're fun to watch, and Strong is really leaning into it nicely.
Yeah, Taven and Bennett, I wish we had a little more character development on them too.
Yeah,
there's just sort of this like smug self-satisfaction to their humor, as if they're just delighted with themselves and we should be too. And I don't know. I feel like AEW is expecting everyone to inherit their backstory. And when you take a step up in terms of viewership in the company you're in, you need to introduce those people. And it's been a problem with AEW from the beginning. They just assume everybody knows because they know. So, I don't know. I say I don't know because I don't know if I want more of Bennett and Taven getting TV time explaining their characters either. So,
good point, yeah. I think the only other thing you asked, Wade, what are the things that we didn't talk about? We talked about the intro, which we always like the interviews to open the show, and how Swerve attacked. Swerve was attacked by Aaron Fox. One, I liked it because it makes you think that all of the intro promos are live, because Swerve was attacked live. Kind of cool. The only drawback, there's two drawbacks that come to mind. Why did it take AR Fox 2 months to, get revenge on Swerve? And then two, no Hangman Page follow-up whatsoever, even if it was like a backstage promo or, taped at Dynamite, or maybe rebuttal. I'm not saying he has to go to Swerve's house or anything like that, but, something to further that heated feud would have been nice too. Didn't ruin the show for me in that sense, but, there were some elements there that I felt, it was worth calling out.
Yeah. The return of the intro promos, it threw me, like that there was a pre-tape where someone was attacked. It's like,
right.
It just feels so self-explanatory or inherently assumed that they're pre-taped.
Exactly.
And post-edited. So, it threw me off. And having that just kind of, flow into the ring entrance in the brawl made sense. One of Shivani's better moments was when Prince Nana backed away from AR Fox and said, I don't want any problems. And Shivani's like, well, maybe you shouldn't break into people's homes because that's going to bring on problems. it's good to underline the obvious when a heel does something so, so heinous, and it is the type of follow-up that you want to see. in this type of situation. Yeah, I'm just trying to think if there's anything else that we didn't cover. I mean, the main event was, you know, 16 minutes of good action. I mean, I sort of baked in and assumed, you know, the action's going to be good. But that was, you know, for people who tune in and are looking for good wrestling, Air Fox and Swerve had a good 11 minutes of action. The Archer-Darby Allin match, I thought they told a really good big man, small man story, and it was well executed and dramatic. And the, I mean, the other matches, were the Acclaimed thing was pretty short, but it was fine. Willow and Emi Sakura, what did you think about that match?
Oh, I liked it. Willow and Emi Sakura. I thought technically it was really good. I just mentally tuned out, to be honest. I watched the match, obviously. I just mentally tuned out because I just think that we were told time and time again that Emi Sakura is a great wrestler and this, you know, this star in Japan, and that's great. And I don't disagree with that. I'll take them at their word, but she never shows that here. She always loses. So utilize her the best way you can, and if this is the best way they can, then so be it. But, you know, a win here or there would be ideal. And again, I'm not suggesting she should have won in this match. It's just put her in the positions that, you know, she can actually, you know, win and build up a resume, and then have her lose. So that's fine. But yeah, I'm just always mentally tuned out to her matches, unfortunately.
Yeah. So, you know, some good athleticism. My final point will be, are you amazed at Ricky Starks' balance, or are you amazed that his opponents let him walk the rope like that and not do anything about it by simply shoving him or pulling him so he falls and hurts himself? It's one of the top three dumb moves in wrestling. I mean, just because you can walk and balance on the top rope. I didn't like Undertaker. I didn't like the spoiler. Don Jardine probably did it better. I haven't seen a lot of footage of him walking the rope in his prime. He probably did something to make his opponent more groggy because he probably cared more about realism. But that I just don't. When people marvel about that, ugh.
Yeah. Agreed. And actually, I think it was last weekend there was a New Japan show in the States, and I think it was Lance Archer, one of the two. There was two people walking the rope, so they had two, you know, opponents holding their hands as they walked toward one another on the rope. So if you don't like one, I'm sure you don't like two, Wade.
Yes, exactly. All right, cool. Patrick, thank you so much. Enjoyed our conversation here.
Yeah, thanks so much, Wade. Appreciate it. Have a good one.
Yep, you bet. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll talk to you all next time.